You're listening to Opacity, a podcast about working in design.
Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Craig. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
Good, good. Happy winter solstice.
Thank you. Same to you. We made it through the longest night.
We did. Yeah. I've been watching the live streams of Newgrange for the last couple of mornings in Ireland. And it's pretty amazing. Yesterday was very overcast and rainy, but the day before and today they were showing the light going into the monument.
The chamber.
The chamber, yes. It's amazing that they can just kind of share that stuff so easily over the interwebs. Yeah. So yeah, Craig, before we get into this topic, we're going to talk about lots of stuff and lots of changes to 2020 and our ways of working. I think it's just important that we kind of acknowledge that, like, a lot of stuff that we're talking about now is new ways of working for designers and that kind of thing. But not everyone has had a very positive year. You know, many people have lost their jobs and that kind of stuff, or maybe are struggling to finding it difficult to find roles. So we'd like to acknowledge that. I don't know, hopefully some of the advice that we give in these podcasts can help in some way, or, you know, if any advice that we can give, maybe if you want to even request stuff from us, maybe we can discuss it in future podcasts, because we know it's not ideal for everybody. So
I think Tom, that's an important point. Yeah, and I think everybody should feel free, if you do listen to this, if you do listen to, whether it's a one-off episode or you listen to this consistently, you know, we're always open. Feel free to reach out to Tom or myself, wherever. We'd love to talk about topics that are particularly relevant to you. But yeah, so we'll talk about some of the things we've noticed this year, but with a sort of an awareness that this year has been different for everybody. Everybody's experienced it differently. Some people have been very comfortable, have been largely unaffected by all the situation going on, and some have been extremely impacted by this, whether it's health-wise or financially or employment or whatever.
Great. And with that, we'll get into the episode. So for this episode, we were thinking of doing a bit of a look back and a look forward over what we've been through this year from a design perspective and change in work culture and that kind of thing, and then what the next couple of years look like as well.
It's been an eventful year, I guess is one way to say it. And yeah, like, there's been ups, there's been downs. Probably everybody's felt the ups and downs a little bit differently. So I think, you know, we can recognize that. And yeah, this will give us just a chance to maybe have a little retrospective on that year, what we've sort of, maybe the big takeaways that we have from it. And I think all of it sort of framed around what does it all mean kind of going forward, and things to maybe look out for, things to pay attention to, or just things to be aware of for whatever reason. I mean, I guess it depends on the specific thing, but yeah. So what's been the big, like, do you have a big ticket item here, Tom? Like, is there, like, what's the winner of 2020 in terms of changes?
I'm sure everyone's experience has been different. For me, the most drastic change has been their move to remote work, which is something that we have mentioned in previous episodes as, you know, as it kind of happened. But that for me has been the big major change with regards to, because it's just changed so much stuff. Like, you're not just no longer in the office. It changes the dynamic of so many other things now, meetings, all those types of things. You know, how you interact with your coworkers and stuff. So that for me has been a pretty huge one. You know, it was something that when it did happen, I remember someone saying at the time, "Oh, this is probably the start of everyone going remote," or, you know, or just being more culturally acceptable for everyone to go remote. And I didn't really think about it at the time, because there was so much stress around why we were working remotely. Like, you know, we didn't know so much about the virus at the time and that kind of thing. So I was just like, any excuse for me not to be in the office right now, I'm not even thinking about the benefits around. I just don't want to, you know, there's no need for me to be in the office right now. So I will, I'm glad to be at home. How about yourself?
Yeah, no, I'd agree. I think, I feel like this move to remote is like the roots of the tree of 2020, all the changes, all this, we'll go with saplings. No idea. That sounds like maybe it's a word.
Is that a plant thing?
But yeah, like, I feel like even as we were kind of chatting about some points to hit in this chat, they all sort of seem to bubble up from that change to remote. And like, it's huge. It's significant. It's really significant and touches so many things that we're like immediately aware of. And then it seems like it touches so many things that we're sort of aware that they're there. Maybe they will become issues, or maybe they'll become opportunities. And then there's things that, probably a ton of things that we're not even thinking about, like, or maybe things we've heard somewhere that's like, oh, that's an interesting idea, or things that are completely off our radar that are only really gonna come to fruition or really kind of become apparent as this thing sort of becomes a little more mature and we sort of live in this remote environment for more time.
Yeah.
So I'd say that's the move to remote is the base of all this. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of people have been thinking about this, and maybe I'm sure there's a lot more articles out now on remote work and in the pandemic, more so than before. But so there's a lot of interesting takes on it, as you mentioned there. There's one person on Twitter I found has been very interesting to follow with some of their points, and that's at Chris Herd, H-E-R-D. I think his business is around setting up teams for working remotely, so obviously he's going to talk about that a lot. But some of the points that he mentions are very interesting. He's saying in one tweet that, in his words, I've spoken to 1,500 plus people about remote work in the last 9 months, a few predictions of what will likely emerge before 2030. And there's a whole thread of stuff. So there's some stuff in there that I hadn't thought about. There's some stuff that I definitely had thought about. But I think that's worth for our listeners to have a look at and what he's saying as well, because he does hit on some really good points. One of the first ones that he mentions there is rural living. So world-class people will move to smaller cities, have lower cost of living and higher quality of life. These regions must innovate quickly to attract that wealth. Better schools, faster internet connections are a must. And he has a whole other, mm-hmm. whole list of other stuff of that that we'll kind of touch on ourselves as well.
I mean, Tom, are you selling your house and moving to the country?
I am not.
Get yourself a nice little farm somewhere, you know, get some goats, some sheep.
No plans just yet.
Make your own sweaters.
No plans just yet. But I can see, like, well, anecdotally, I'm hearing that there's a lot more of that stuff happening, especially in maybe, you know, the likes of San Francisco and stuff like that, where people don't have to work from their office, so they're moving back to more affordable accommodation and stuff. Anecdotally, that's what I'm hearing. There's a lot of that happening.
It's something that I think about when I see somebody who's done it. I'm like, oh yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah, just get a little house somewhere with a little bit of land, just kind of have a chill existence. Obviously, it's not that simple, but it is nice to be able to at least think about those things and think about the possibility of that becoming more real. I wonder some of the impacts of this, like in terms of job availability, even down to like wages, like what we actually earn when all of that starts to change, because a lot of us, if you live in a city, you're often paid based on sort of the living wage of that city. You know, 10 years from now, why would a company pay a city wage when their employees are distributed around the world in rural and urban environments, and it's less relevant for their workers to be nearby. So how does that change pay? How does that change? Also, you know, if I'm looking for a job, okay, I'm going to move, like this old kind of thing of I'm going to move to the big city and then there's job opportunities there. I'm going to make it in the big city. Well, that's not relevant. I'm going to stay in the country and just like apply for jobs and work on my skills and that'll be it. And then there's no reason to move. There's so many kind of effects of all that that's going to change. I imagine it'll change cities, it'll change downtown urban environments, you know, hopefully, like he was saying, change rural environments to have more services that people kind of expect. So yeah, that's going to be an interesting impact of all this.
That type of change in culture of like career culture, I suppose, of like leaving where you're from, especially if you're from smaller towns and going to the big city. That happens in every country. It's not, you know, people move out from the country to up to Dublin because in Ireland, or people move to London, or people move to New York or San Francisco because of those opportunities you mentioned. Like, my understanding is that's not not really to the benefit of the local of those rural places, because people don't have those opportunities. People don't have the infrastructure, so they leave, and then there's no investment. All the young people are leaving those areas. Mm-hmm. So I can imagine if more people are staying where they're living or deciding to live in other places that are not, that are outside the big cities, then, as he mentioned, like do they benefit? Is there kind of a spread out of benefits as opposed to it all clustered in the the higher density areas? Could that kind of raise the living standard, not as much of a peak and trough, as in like the peak in the cities and the troughs in kind of other areas, but does it flatten it out a little bit more? As you mentioned, if the salaries do decrease but they're still to a good standard, then the cost of living matches.
I wonder, like, yeah, what will downtown cities look like, you know, just like what will the Dublin city center look like in 10 years if everybody moves to wherever? Then like people aren't going in, coffee shops need to shut down, you know, a lot of the lot of the retail. It's sort of like, it reminds me of this talk about retail and like how, okay, the move to online shopping, and then, you know, what does the store, what does the shop become? Mm-hmm. You know, like, why do people go to the shop if they can just order online? Mm-hmm. And then the nature of that shop changes to be like, you know, it's about the, but I guess what people talk about is, it's about the experience of going into the shop, and it's about mm-hmm. It's kind of like going to the Apple store. There's a particular feeling you get walking in, and there's a way you're greeted and all that stuff, mm-hmm. you know, to use that. How do downtowns change to be like experiential as opposed to like going to the city in order to get this thing that you need because whatever. Yeah. So yeah. It'll be interesting to see how that all changes. Yeah.
To that point of like the experience of going in, I think it's also like an impulsive thing as well, as in like I can go into the store and leave with the thing now and have it in my hands. Mm-hmm. And I think that for me, like if I can do that, I prefer to do that, especially if I can shop local and do that. Because there's always mm-hmm. the, you know, especially if you're splashing out, if you're treating yourself, it's nice to get that treat straight away and not have to wait for it to be delivered, mm-hmm. you know, even if it's delivered quite quickly.
Yeah, once the drones come and, you know, like you just click the button and you can hear the buzz of the drones coming and you can just, you know, it'll knock on the door and then be right there. You see the drones crashing in the sky.
That sounds dystopian.
It's a weird dystopian, like it's all this kind dystopian, of dystopian futures, yeah. Like all of this, it's funny because like move to remote work. Oh, we get to work at home. This is great. And then, but like, it seems to open up the door to a lot of this. And maybe it's just our imagination. We always go to this sort of dystopian future, but it does seem to kind of set us up for some of it. But
yeah.
But yeah, that's location. What's next?
Yeah, I think one of the points you made a bit earlier on was around like the changing of locations and time zones as well. And obviously that if you're a global company, that will often happen, especially if you've got people that are spend their day working at a laptop or a computer or something. It's not like an bricks and mortar business where you have to be on location. Asynchronous work is something that is going to be much more prevalent, I think, in the workplace. Mm-hmm. In that case, because you can imagine if you're spread out over time zones, and not even, you know, currently larger companies they might have offices in like San Francisco, say for example, you might have one in San Francisco, you might have one in Dublin, and then you might have one in Croatia or something like that, right? Or even India. And that's right across the time zones. Like that is the person in, say, I'll just use Dublin as an example, is 8 hours behind someone in San Francisco. And then it's probably the other way for India. I'm not sure what the time difference is there for India. Is it 8 hours or 7 hours the other way?
Not sure.
Yeah, but basically they won't match up. So someone, if someone wanted to have a one-to-one call from San Francisco to India, that would be a nightmare clash of the schedules, you know? So mm-hmm. I think the asynchronous work, asynchronous communication, you can see a lot of companies even doing this now. And I think you mentioned previously you use Loom and stuff to record video mm-hmm. updates for people. I've been doing that as well. I've just been using QuickTime. But I find, you know, you're trying to find a schedule that overlaps across the globe for a 30-minute conversation or something. Why not record as much as you can, get into details, let that person view it at their own time. If they can reply in a video as well, or if we can set up even a call, if we can get that overlap of time, it's probably much more efficient because everyone, you know, we're kind of hitting the ground running as opposed to the usual pleasantries at the start of a meeting and, you know, and then going over all mm-hmm. the details and stuff. So I'm a big fan of recording because you can get a lot of nuance and context and detail in even in a mm-hmm. minute, in a minute or two video. What are your thoughts on that too?
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I think it's the way we communicate asynchronously needs to kind of mature a bit mm-hmm. Because it's not, you know, just being asynchronous is not like blast off an email to everybody with the full kind of rundown of something and then creating this kind of environment where everyone now needs to carve out time in order to read this, your kind of opus on this whatever, like
yeah.
medium for how we communicate, but then also like communication skills become super important. Like if someone's bad at communicating in a remote work environment, like you're going to struggle. Like it's going to be really hard. I mean, there's always communication skills are always needed at work. Like it's always a bullet point on job descriptions, like communicates effectively or whatever. But now it's like that on steroids. It's like, you know, you need to be able to communicate clearly, succinctly, you know, both in a meeting because everyone's tired of being on the Zoom call. You know, if you're that rambler person who wants to blab on for, you know, 20 minutes every time someone brings up a point, no one's going to want to be in a meeting with you. You know,
I feel personally attacked, Craig.
And then, yeah, like, so then there's the medium of communication. So there's the written form. Okay, send a Slack message. Okay, that's one thing. Or let's see, email has moved to Slack. Okay, like, what are we thinking about voice, like, you know, recording audio and sending that as opposed to text? What do we think about adding videos? Like, I have a thing where I typically add a video summary to a doc that I write to make sure that, you know, if I'm sending this out, I'm going to assume that the person I'm sending it to is busy and has their mind in a million places. So dropping a little video that gives them a 3-minute explainer, maybe it's an overview of what the contents of the doc are. Either it's kind of the high level points of the doc, or it's just a general kind of orientation to the doc, you know, whatever it is. But I think the idea is to always be thinking about how we can communicate better. And then hearing people's, like, did people read your doc? Did people respond to it? Like, what was the response when you shared that? My experience has been those kind of, when you try to do it a little differently, like, the response is super positive and people really kind of like it, because it's different and it's new and it's easier for them to consume. It's the same thing. Like, you know, we should think about the way we communicate, especially asynchronously, in this kind of different sort of way. You know, think about how you can beat the sort of pitfalls of bad communication.
They're really good points, actually. Yeah, as you mentioned, that it's usually good communication is something that's just on the job. It's on every job specification, I suppose, that you'd see. But it's really important. And in the past, it's you'd probably assume, like, oh, that's kind of like verbal, you know, verbal primarily, maybe some email communication. But as you're saying, it's much more nuanced now. Where, yeah, as you said, like, you need to be able to capture all the details that need to be there, in a way that's efficient. Mm-hmm. Often asynchronous is like you could be in the same time zone but need to work asynchronously. But when you're in different time zones, so if you're like San Francisco is 8 hours ahead of Dublin. I've got colleagues that are in San Francisco, so, you know, they're kind of, there's like an overlap of about an hour generally that we have, and that's that sounds fine, right? In theory, that sounds fine, and it generally is, it works okay, right? But like the difference is that, like, they're just waking up, I'm at the end of my day, you know, and you're probably the same as well, and it's very different. We're very different at the different times of day, especially as the week goes on, you know. You're kind of like Thursday, you're kind of like, oh, you're just naturally getting tired as the week goes on. And I'm generally kind of a better morning person, you know, like I get up, get some coffee, and I can talk in the morning. So I can only just imagine what I'd be like to them. Sometimes they're kind of like just getting their coffee, they're kind of just waking up. And there's that issue as well of, like, when you are trying to work synchronously across time zones, there's that challenge there as well.
100%. Yeah. No, I definitely feel that experience. I think probably more so the folks in, you know, in San Francisco feel that probably the most, because they're the ones waking up early to then get their mind in the zone. Whereas, like, we're already well into our day.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we're on the downside of the hump. They're on the very start. And just to be aware of that. And yeah, like, then we invest in asynchronous communication. We figure out how to do that better. But sometimes synchronous communication is necessary, but it's sort of like, when is it necessary? And, you know, this whole idea of, like, can you jump on a Zoom call thing? Like, okay, can you jump on a Zoom call, or can that type of communication be done in a different way? To sort of respect their focus time, you know, because everybody has their own way of doing their day. They don't have to fit into a 9 to 5 or 9 to 6 or whatever schedule. So, like, maybe they're a person who wakes up super early. Maybe they're a person who likes to work at night when they have some quiet time, you know, whatever that is, that, like, now they have control over that.
Yeah.
And asynchronous communication respects that kind of thing. So, like, hey, kid, you know, if you can't talk now, here's a video. Here's a 3-minute explainer of a thing I wanted to share with you. Let me know when you have 10 minutes to chat about it. That kind of stuff, like, can really, I think, just communicate. Like, it's just really, I think, respectful and a good way to work. And
especially if it's very detailed stuff, as you mentioned. I remember sending stuff over, you know, not so recently enough, and you're talking about specs, and you're talking about, like, stakeholders, and you're talking about, there was some animation stuff in there, and there's some technical stuff as well, and within, I think it's about a 5-minute video, I managed to fit in a lot of stuff. Like, if I tried to type that out, I'd be there all day. Like, I just couldn't communicate it. But with the combination of the visuals, I was sharing multiple screens, jumping between things, and the constant is me talking over it. And I think it was good. The feedback I got was was good. Like, people understood it, but other people that I shared it were like, that was great. Like, you just, traditionally, that's something that you'd need to be in a room together with, and then I would present all this stuff to you, you know, and then you'd be sitting there just taking it in. And then, you know, to my mind, if it's short and snappy and to the point, but detailed, you know, rich in its details, then you can even go back over it again. You know, what was that he said? He said something that was interesting. You know, whereas when it's kind of like just a conversation, you're trying to remember what the person said. And then, you know, so there's always this that issue.
And you will remember wrongly. Like, that's like, it's a known thing, right? Like, somebody says something, everybody in the room hears it differently.
Yeah.
Someone was maybe half paying attention. They heard it one way. Like, yeah. And somebody is using their own kind of analysis to figure out what you really meant. But yeah, there's so much room for problems. At least if you record it, like, you can have people go back and reference it. But
assuming that it's explained well, I think that's the thing as well. It's the communication. What are you using to communicate it as best you can?
Yeah. Those communication skills to be synced. I use Loom for these videos a lot, which is a great tool. And because I use the free version, it limits videos to 5 minutes, which is really good. It's a really good kind of forcing function to keep your things succinct. So, like, sometimes I'll do a few 5 minutes and sort of speckle them around, but like, it is good. Like, I end up having to record it a couple of times just to get it right, because like, I record it, I didn't fit it in, let me do it again and make it tighter, and then do it again and make it tighter. And so, like, I'm reworking the thing, making it as tight as possible to be like the minimum amount of words, but with the full amount of detail that's needed. You know, so that kind of thing is, you know, because if you're going to send out an hour-long video explaining the intricacies of this button, you know, that's a silly thing, and no one's going to watch that, and you're going to be hated.
Oh yeah, so, absolutely. Right. But you know, it's funny, like, because that sounds good, right? Like, when what you're saying there, you know, the limit of time, the fact that you're almost rehearsing it to try and get it like as tight as you can, like that sounds to me like isn't like that's efficient. Like, it's being really efficient, right? But I'm in the back of my mind, and like, okay, what would that be like if it was back in the office? And it sounds beneficial, right? Because it's like, it's more efficient. It's a better use of people's time. But is there is that happening at an expense? Or will that happen at an expense over time, where we're just pure efficiency? What I'm getting at is, like, if I was in the office, you'd probably talk, you'd have that suggestion, or you'd have that kind of discussion, would probably take more than 5 minutes, because it's a dialogue. Mm-hmm. You might have questions and all that type of stuff. Then there's like distractions and all that. And then there's like people getting coffee and all. So like, those types of things that are like part of the social side of being in an office and working with colleagues, they're beneficial, but also kind of at times detrimental to productivity, because it's great to be around people. I love working with the team that I work with. Personally, since we've been working from home, I haven't found it. It's been fine for me. I've actually really enjoyed it. I know some of the people I work with can't wait to be able to get back to the office. They miss people. We talk regularly enough. We have stand-ups, there's meetings and stuff like that. And we usually have put some time aside to kind of like socialize and stuff. But yeah, I'm wondering if we become too efficient, too mechanical, too cold in a way, too, you know, I can see people getting more selfish with their time. Do you know, like, I could see that probably possibly happening. Not selfish isn't the right word, but you know, a cultural change of how you use your time and how you allow others to interject in that time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm sure there's all kinds of kind of flip sides to this. It makes me think about this thing, and it was mentioned in that Twitter thread you mentioned of this sort of output focus. I'm not sure if this is exactly what you're saying, but maybe it's close. It's just really focus on outputs and what you deliver, as opposed to sort of what we've had in the past, where it's sort of you bring like a lot of yourself to work. You bring a certain way of socializing with coworkers in the kitchen. You bring a certain vibe to a meeting. Like, oh, when you're in that meeting, like, you bring interesting, you know, perspectives, and you whatever, like, everybody brings something unique to those environments. And a lot of that can be lost, especially, you know, you think about yourself and you think about your manager and maybe what your manager sees, or maybe if you're a manager, what do you see of the people on your team? And I guess this has been talked about. There was a really good article on this. Try to dig it up, talking about this kind of, yeah, it's just focused on sort of what's the sort of end result of what you've done. And it's sort of, you're judged based on that end result, and you're not sort of assessed by the totality of your, well, what you bring to the table. So I think this could be sort of you know, downside of these changes is figure out how do you let people bring their full self when we're all in our own little bubble, communicating asynchronously and just sort of sending out, you know, these messages. We're sending them out into the ether to be consumed and then to be reported back asynchronously, and sort of, you know, it's a funny and different and kind of weird way to work in a way.
Yeah. You know, because when you think back to like the standard 9-to-5 jobs, you know, where you go in, everyone's in the same building at the same time, right? Well, let's think of a factory line worker, right? Because that's very just like efficient and mechanical almost. You know, everyone clocks in at the same time. Everyone's at their station at the same time. Everyone is part of a machine that's producing this thing. And then at the end, like, and there's an understanding there, like everyone, you know, maybe there's breaks at the same time, all that type of stuff. Like everyone is completely in sync as much as you can be in a workplace. And then you're available throughout that time that you're there. You're not available clearly after say 5, right? If you go and clock out, people, like it's there's a physical action of like in that instance of like, I'm clocking out now. You know, I'm actually like I'm physically leaving the building, but I'm also symbolically leaving the building as well. Or even if I'm in the building, I've clocked out now, so don't ask me anything about work. You know, there's that kind of, it's a very almost like, it's a very clear delineation between work time and not work time, and then you leave the building. So obviously more of our jobs over the years are moving away from that, right? So there's no clocking in generally, like it depends on where you work, right? But like say the environments that we would work in, if you're a designer working in a company, there's generally no clocking in. I don't know anyone who clocks in and goes to that job. And the time, the timing and how the time is spent is a bit more amorphous. It's not like a solid block of like, everyone's working now for 3 hours and then everyone goes on a break and then everyone comes back, you know? Things have been staggered. People take lunch at different times. People go to the gym, you know, over the breaks and that kind of stuff. And people stay back a bit later, or they might come in a bit later or start earlier. You know, there's kind of like, there's a kind of like a general overlap of time and location. But for the most part, there's been like a core amount of the day that's overlapped, even if some people start earlier and they don't, or other people start later. I suppose, like in a way, if we move completely away from that, where we're like, there's total freedom. Just say there's a world where there's total freedom on your schedule. You can work whatever time you need to work once you get your job done. Does that then bring it back to more like, even though it's amorphous and people are all working asynchronously, is the focus then brought similarly to a factory line on the product, that's the output of the thing that's happening, and not who's actually doing it? Do you know, it's actually like what is getting done?
Yep.
So I wonder about that.
Yeah.
Probably haven't explained it very well, but I'm kind of musing on it at the moment.
No, I mean, I think it's clear to me, like it's 100% this output, because it's the whole thing, which we probably say ourselves all the time, is like, well, as long as you're getting your job done, it's fine. You know, if you get your job done in 6 hours a day instead of 8, or if it takes you 15, or I don't know, like what are the bounds, and getting your job done, quote unquote, literally means it's like the outputs. It is what have you produced? Like how many rivets have you riveted? Are they called rivets? I don't know. Like the factory line worker, how many? But if you're judged by those very kind of tangible, those outputs, then it's not like, okay, I didn't produce enough. I didn't push enough pixels today because I was in 3 hours of meetings. Do I earn points to my production level because of the meetings I participated in? Like, or should those have an asynchronous? And then it's like everything becomes sort of unclear. Like getting your job done becomes like, what is getting my job done mean? And what does that mean for the position I'm in? You know, if I'm in this role, is getting my job done putting out these documents that are like essential for the team, or is it producing screens or like, you know, kind of assets for to be consumed by engineering? Like, what is getting our job done mean in that, you know, in this world? And you know, I don't think that's a good thing to be
no,
like this focus on outputs is not a great thing. And yeah, I mean, this can drive overwork, right? Like, why hyper focus on outputs? Like, if that is the trend we're moving towards, like, you know, hypothetically, you could imagine that, you know, you work a full day, let's say you work your full 8 hours. And on top of that, you've also, you know, you had something pop up during lunchtime, you had to jump in that. So you ended up missing your lunch break, you ended up eating at your desk. You know, then at night, after sort of all the lights are off and things are quiet. Let's say it's 9 o'clock at night and you're like, oh, well, let me, I had this thing I wanted to finish. So I'm going to jump on for another 5 minutes. Not 5 minutes. 5 minutes on a computer always becomes 3 hours.
Yeah.
You know, so then, you know, you end up working this hugely long day, but it's okay because you're being judged by your outputs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, because you've worked so many hours, maybe you've output a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And then you sort of feel okay about that. So it's creating this cycle of overwork because it's driven by outputs.
Yeah.
So I think that's a sort of a dangerous thing to watch out for.
Yeah,
and if
yeah.
you're in an environment where that's happening, like to be kind of aware of that and maybe even raise a flag when you see, do you see other people doing that?
Yeah.
Like, because you know, you might have a vision on other people that isn't seen by management maybe.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think it's important to try and maintain that balance. And I think that comes from, you know, it's up to companies, I think, to communicate that, the, what is our culture, mm-hmm. you know, because it's not, yeah. we're not machines. You know, and
yeah.
as you mentioned there, even you mentioned the physical act of like taking, open up the laptop at like 9 o'clock at night and doing some more mm-hmm. work, right? But like this line of work, stuff is getting mulling around in the back of our heads all the time. Like you don't have to have a laptop in front of you to be doing work. Do you know? Like I often think of it as like design problems are like puzzles. Some of them are kind of more interesting than others, especially if it's something new. And you might finish up for the day, but you're still kind of mulling it around the back of your head because it's like this, you know, this kind of like Rubik's Cube that you're kind of like, you want to solve. Mm-hmm. And you might not be actually physically having a laptop. You might be washing the dishes. Usually, you know, the shower thoughts and that kind of stuff in your brain kind of goes into, you know, just doing mundane mm-hmm. things that you can solve. In the factory worker scenario we're talking about before, that doesn't happen because you can't physically do it without being on the job. So I think that's kind of an interesting yeah. thing where it's just being able to be conscious about that and not like, even if you step away from the desk and you go down and you have dinner and all that you're you find a way to clearly break the day, you know, break the mental, the how you're thinking. I think that's something that the commute used to help with. You know, I used to cycle to work in the morning, I'd cycle back, and there is a ritual in the day that breaks up mm-hmm. the day, right? And I don't miss that so much anymore, right? I'm happy enough to be working from home and not have to commute. I've got more control over, but like as a result, you do have to compensate for that somehow, because there's not that obvious break of like you're leaving the building. Maybe you leave if you're working on a laptop, like designers mostly do, you leave your laptop in the office, so you can't sometimes you couldn't do the work. Whereas now it's right there, it's on that same desk that you were sitting at all day, and you know, depending on how your office mm-hmm. setup is, it might be in your living room, or you know, it's not much changes when you switch off for the day and you turn around and you're already in the room that you're mm-hmm. going to spend the rest of the day in. You know, one of our previous episodes when we were talking with Sinead, she was talking about you know, she does yoga in the morning, little rituals like that. I've started to do more hobbies that don't require, you know, painting and stuff like that I consciously try to get away from screens. Like I can still be creative and I can use those creative juices to do something that's productive, but it's not work. Do you know, it's a hobby. It's something I enjoy. Mm-hmm. And it's got a meditative yeah. kind of quality to it.
I think one of the things you mentioned there at the start of that was the company you work for and their sort of their responsibility to make that culture clear around work. The same thing applies for all these things. Like it's really a lot of this. I mean, it falls on the individual, but we can't, you know, we don't work in vacuums. Like we work inside these little societies called companies, and like we are influenced by our coworkers and how they work. We see somebody else working a bit extra, we're going to work a bit extra. We see somebody else get a promotion because of this sort of, you know, almost burnt out levels of work that they've done. Okay, I need to burn myself out to get that promotion. Like, you know, those kind of things. I think it's really a lot of the onus falls on the company, whether it's a manager of a team or a sort of a director of a function, or you know, to the top level, to really kind of be clear about what are the bounds, like what are we trying to do and how are we going to do it and how are we going to make sure our employees stay happy and healthy and can actually function in this remote world better. Like, because I don't know about you, but like my experience, productivity has never been higher, like in a lot of the work that I've seen. Like obviously not everybody's having that experience. Some people, like, and I say that now, like you know, 10 months into the pandemic. You know, at the start of it, obviously productivity probably took a bit of a dip because everybody was trying to figure it out, or maybe overwork just compensated for that. But like, you know, in our world, like, it's possible to be very productive in this environment, potentially even more productive than being in an office. All that to say, kind of, I think that companies have a big responsibility, like company leadership has a big responsibility to make that super clear. What are the bounds? Like, we care about your health. And like, you know, paying attention to stress and like picking up on stressors in the environment, like work can be very stressful. The stresses can sort of ebb and flow. We're individuals, so we have stressful situations. Maybe at home there's stressors going on. Maybe, you know, whatever. There's so much opportunity for stress right now, and for people to be like hyper aware of their own kind of state and how they're doing, and to be able to kind of take care of themselves. But then also for managers and companies to be, you know, extra aware. Like, they should have always been aware, right? But like, now, because we're so distant, you know, to make sure, figure out ways to be aware of people and then their sort of emotional state, to make sure they're not you know, wrecking themselves.
Yeah, you absolutely have to be kind of conscious of your people. And I think you need to, it's a cultural thing, but I think you need to be explicit about it as well. I think a lot of culture is kind of implicit at times in some places, like, because it's something that you just pick up from the way everyone else kind of behaves. But I think things like this are important. You need to be explicit about it, because, you know, if you don't, you can have people overworking themselves unnecessarily, because it's kind of short-term game. It's not sustainable. You know, you can have people that are like, well, everyone's been so productive. Let's kind of, let's say, encouraging things to ramp them up even further. You know, not be explicit about it, but kind of go, oh, great, everyone's been so, like, the performance is great at the moment. Keep it up, everybody. And everyone is kind of at their wit's end. I think you need to, you know, it's just not sustainable. Yeah. We aren't machines. Like, you can't just keep on putting in fuel and stuff like that. And we're not producing, especially if it's kind of like, you know, mentally taxing work. There's an invisible strain there, you know, and that's kind of hard to, that's just extra sensitive, I think. And you need to be, I think, good companies now, I think in the coming years will have explicit kind of policies and stuff like that. And they'll make it very clear. Listen, if you are working asynchronously, if you're working at a time, you know, if you're working in your own schedule in a different side of the globe to everyone else, you know, we don't expect, you know, you can't expect someone to be like, you can imagine if you're in a particular location that you might be expected to start early and finish late to accommodate different areas, like if you did want to be synchronous in a way. So I think it's just being explicit about that type of thing is important. Yeah, and looking after people's health, because you can burn them out quickly and then they can just leave.
Yeah, and I think this looking after people applies to everybody, but I think particularly if you have somebody like new in their career, like I do have some worries inside of me for people who are starting, like people who started their first job in 2020.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's hard for everybody, but to be, you know, fresh out of school or whatever, like to join and you have your first job in this environment and to be remote and you've never met your colleagues in face to face. You've only interacted with them, you know, over calls, which have always been about work. You know, it's not a great way to start your career, especially you're not being sort of looked after by not necessarily a mentor, but someone at the company who sort of has your back and like a buddy system or whatever, like, you know, to make sure that just people are being cared for. Cause I personally wouldn't want to start in this environment just because I think it's because of the lack of sort of remote maturity that probably 99% of companies have, just because we've been forced into this, you know, though it's working generally well, it doesn't change the fact that all these companies do not really know how to work remote. Like, it's, no one knows how to work remotely really. but especially, you know, because very few companies made the conscious choice to be fully remote. So, and there's a lot of that comes along with that maturity. And I do worry that people starting out will get left behind. So I think it's a particular thing to be conscious of, whether you are starting out and you need to communicate that, or if you are someone who manages people, to be like extra aware of them.
That's a great point.
One other thing that comes to mind, it mentioned in that Twitter thread about meeting death. And obviously we all, like, Zoom fatigue is a well-known kind of phenomenon now, you know, that we've all experienced to some extent. I wonder also if there's an opportunity here for designers, you know, obviously not all designers consider themselves to be facilitators, but I would say probably a good chunk have some experience facilitating sessions. Mm-hmm. And I think there's an opportunity here because like facilitating an in-person workshop is one thing, or an in-person session is one thing, but facilitating a remote session is a very different thing. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some talk out there about, you know, how to do this better, but I think it's something, you know, for people listening, like to think about as a potential superpower for you, you know, as what you can bring to the company. Like, yeah, so we mentioned this a bit in episode 28, mm-hmm. Moments That Matter Most, about this creating defining moments for others. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something here about remote facilitation that relates to that episode. But it's really, I think, just thinking about yourself and how you can add value to the organization around you. You know, no one is good at, well, the majority of people are not good at these sort of remote sessions. Like, it's hard enough. It's one thing when you get a nice tool, you get Miro, you get Whimsical, or not Whimsical, you get Miro, or you get, what's the other one? Mural. You get Miro or you get Mural. Okay, you got your tools sorted out. Everybody can throw their stickies up and do all that stuff. But like, you know, good sessions are not just about having post-its. Like the tools just replace the fact that we don't have physical post-its. You know, so obviously get your tools sorted out, but also think about who on your team or you as an individual, can you be a good facilitator in this remote environment? Mm. Because I'd bet some money that people who can do that, you know, are going to stand out. You know, Tom's good at facilitating. Let's get him in. I mean, maybe you'll regret it, but like at some point people might be actually requesting your facilitation, quote unquote, services to come in and help them. But like, you know, that's a huge thing for companies to have somebody within the team, or like to know that your design team has a few really good remote facilitators. Like that's a skill that I think will stand out in you know the years to come. Mm. Because at least from my experience, like I don't think I'm doing particularly well in it. I think I could really upskill in this and help people out as a result, but I think probably a lot of people are in the same boat. It's just we know we're not that good at it, but we don't quite know how to be better. Mm. So I think that's something to sort of a skill to watch out for.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think we're all kind of learning as we go in this environment as well, or working remotely. Even things like making sure that people that are more quiet in the meetings, you know, giving them a space maybe to share their thoughts as well, whether it's kind of like, mm-hmm. you know, passing it off to them, because there's naturally people in the meeting who tend to do most of the talking. Some people just take more time to mull things over. And I think we've mentioned this in previous episodes as well, but it can kind of, the dynamic can feel strange. It can feel a bit, you know, you say something, there's no answer. You might get an emoji thumbs up or something like that. It's kind of like, it doesn't have the same feeling as when you're in a room with people and you read their body language, or you can tell if they want to say something, or mm-hmm. you can tell if they're just mulling it over, or you know the type of person they are, that they tend to just mull stuff over. Whereas it's a bit cold on a Zoom call when you just got like no response, you know, no audible response.
Yeah.
So I definitely think that's going to be an important string to the bow, I suppose, of designers and just professionals in general mm-hmm. going forward.
Cool. So Tom, like we're probably, I guess, coming to the end of the episode. Yep. Is there any kind of, you know, this is your final words to the world in 2020?
Oh, yeah. I would suppose.
Not to put any pressure, but what are the big things?
Yeah.
The big thing to take away?
I think, well, just like, you know, looking after yourself is so important, right? So how do we think about that? That's different to before. I think work-life balance is very important. We've kind of touched on it a bit in this episode around, ideally, the company you work for have an explicitly tell the staff, look after yourselves, take, you know, don't overwork, take the time off you need, all those types of things. And but I think work-life balance is so important. So figure out a way that you, whatever helps you to kind of unwind, if it's yoga, if it's painting, if it's whatever, running, whatever it is, I think it's important to do those types of things. How about you?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think work-life balance is a big one. If we think about the work-life balance is different, like it's different than it used to be. Yeah. It's not the same type of balance that we used to have, where we'd go to work, we'd commute home, and then we'd sort of have our life here, and we had our work there. Yeah. Now it's all blended. So it's so important to figure out where you can create those boundaries for your own like mental health, but your own kind of enjoyment. Like I struggle with this. Like I look at you, Tom. you know, painting and doing these, you got these hobbies, which are great. I'll try to use you as inspiration, because I've lacked, like I lack that a lot. I, you know, there's books I want to read that I'm just not reading. There's activities I want to do. Like there's such a long list of, and there's all those kind of projects that's like, well, what do you do with side projects? Which is a whole nother thing. Like, what do you do with side projects when you're working remotely and trying to find work-life balance? Because then really everything just bleeds together and it's just designing this thing and then I'm designing that thing. And I'm thinking about like, you know, figure out where those bounds are and then figure out how to, like how firm you want to keep those bounds. And yeah, it's something I'm going to, you know, work on in the new year for sure.
Yeah, I think it's something we all could get better at. I think I've mentioned this before. The reason why I've kind of picked up painting and stuff more so recently is after I burnt myself out, I needed to kind of meditate in a different way. I'm not a yoga type person, mm-hmm. so I find that that's meditation for me, and it's kind of creative output as well. And it's non-screen time as much as I can be as well. Like that's mm-hmm. another thing I think is to look out for, is that we're moving from screens to screens to screens. It's just not healthy for us, you know? So, whatever we can do to kind of break that up. And, you know, I wouldn't put yourself mm-hmm. under any pressure. If there's a way that you can kind of healthily create habits for yourself, like positive habits, then that works. You know, sometimes I kind of go through peaks and troughs of being creative, and then I just kind of remind myself, actually, you know, I find that really, that's like meditation for me. Just stick on some music, start painting, or, you know, and then I always feel better after it, or play guitar or something, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So whatever you can do to positively reinforce those good habits, mm-hmm. even if it's just like putting in your calendar, do you know, like setting a time and date mm-hmm. that you're going to do this and scheduling with yourself, if that works for you, you know? So do it, mm-hmm. Craig, and keep us up to date.
I will. Yeah, keep me on the hook or whatever.
I can just message you every now and again and say, here, Craig, come on, do that thing. Come do on. That creative, do that calming hobby that you've got.
Cool. Well, that's a good place probably to leave it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tom. It's been a great year podcasting with you.
Same. Yeah.
We started slow this year. We took a big pause, and then we sort of ramped back up in the fall, the autumn, and the winter.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been good. We're looking forward to starting fresh in the new year.
Yeah. Right? Hopefully it's a more positive new year we'll have.
Oh yeah. 2021 is going to be full of beautiful things.
So how do people find you online, Craig?
You can find me on LinkedIn. Look up Craig Phillips. I'm the only Craig Phillips in Dublin, I think.
Oh, interesting. I'm on Twitter, at Tom C Design, and Tom Cunningham on LinkedIn also. So until next time, hopefully the end of the year goes as well as it can be for people, and make sure to, in the famous words of Jerry Springer, look after yourselves and each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wear your mask, wash your hands, all that good stuff, right?
Thanks for listening to Opacity. To find any links mentioned in this episode, check out the show notes. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share with your friends and colleagues, post about it on social media, or leave us a rating or review wherever you listen. This helps us keep the podcast relevant and helps others discover new episodes. You can listen and subscribe to Opacity on iTunes, Spotify, Anchor, or wherever you consume audio. To connect with the show, find us on Twitter at Opacity Podcast, or search for Opacity Podcast on YouTube. Opacity is an independent podcast hosted by Tom Cunningham and myself, Craig Phillips. Recorded and published in Dublin, Ireland. Music and cover art by Tom Cunningham. Thanks again for listening.